Hello everyone, welcome to Combox, where the game lives on. I'm your host Varun Alvakonna and I'm joined by Jared Kimber. And today's footmarks is on Yusuf Pathan. So Jared, Yusuf made 137 when Rajasthan Royals were chasing 213 back in 2010. He was 15 or 14. He did not look like he was getting his timing right at all. The required run rate just kept going up and up. He hits a six. And it was nearly a drop chance. Sorry, nearly caught. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where like 9 out of 10 people would say that's tough. And Rob Barron would be the other person to say that's a drop chance.
A drop.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And then he hits 54 of 11, his next 11 balls that day. 11 boundaries in a row. Right? He makes 46 of 14 versus spin in that game. Mm. And it's not just the first time he does it as well. Right? He does it again. But after that game was done, Shane Warne had said that it's the best innings he's ever seen. And then Mike Selvey had written an article talking about how wrong Shane Warne was and how Yusuf was basically just like a slogger, wasn't it?
I mean, to be fair, I wrote the same piece, but not from the same perspective, which is quite interesting. I think a lot of us went, well, this is not the best innings we have ever seen, right, mm-hmm. at the time. But what was interesting about the Mike Selvey one is that Mike Selvey's basically like, I think he would have had the pejorative view of most people who knew about cricket at the time, right, which is Yusuf Pathan went on a run where he hit a bunch of fours and sixes and he's a big guy and he hits the ball really hard and he got a little bit lucky and it was a little bit tinny and it was fine. And at the same time, Shane Warne saying it was the best innings he'd ever seen. It's a really important innings, which is why you start the piece this piece with it. But it's actually not the greatest innings of all time. There is a streakiness to it, as you've just said, right? But I, like, having lived through that, I think the overwhelming feeling I had was afterwards is that we weren't ready as a cricket society to understand an innings like this in 2010, right? And if you go back in ODI cricket, we've always had like a guy go nuts. Remember, there was a guy called Wayne Holdsworth in like List A cricket in the like 90s in Australia, made like 49 off 15 balls or something, right? Never did anything like that before. Like, we've all seen like one guy go off and it never happened before. And so I think we were trained to think, well, this isn't proper batting. And so actually, we shouldn't be rating this innings that high. Shane Warne never met a teammate he didn't want to overhype. So he's a slightly different beast within this. But then looking back at everything we now know and being able to go back, I think what, you know, you and I have looked at in this story is actually, it's just that we weren't ready for what Yusuf Pathan was, right? Which is, you know, a genetic mutation of batting, because we had seen players who were good against spin before and who'd scored quickly against spin. But this is probably the first out and out spin basher. You know, even guys like Sehwag and Simons, who should have been that, were just held back a little bit, right? And Yusuf Pathan is the first guy who's told, no, that's what you're supposed to do. Go and hit sixes against spin. So I think it's a fascinating innings. And, you know, as someone who watched it live, and was confused about it at the time. It's just absolutely a baffling situation to have happen.
So in the IPL, for a minimum of 1,000 runs versus spin, Yusuf has the second best true strike rate. He's just behind Glenn Maxwell's 34. So I think that initially when Sharon and I were talking about this piece last year, we had a lot of Maxi and Yusuf comparisons because we were like, okay, they're very similar in the way that they're both misunderstood. However, the more I looked into Yusuf, the more I realized he is very different from Maxi, mainly because if you look at Yusuf's individual years versus spin, in the first 3 years of the IPL, he has 2 years where he's averaging more than 60 at a strike rate of over 200 versus spin, right? I think the only person I know who has done it is Abhishek Sharma as well. He's the only one who's done it, and it took him, 15 years between the two and the Impact Sabera to do that, right?
Yeah.
This is actual spin bashing territory. And on top of that, he also has several years where he's averaging over 40 at a strike rate of over 140 as well. So it's that ability which I think sets him apart from Maxwell. Is Maxwell, as good as he is with spin, doesn't stay in versus spin, whereas Yusuf has shown he can. I think 2016, Yusuf Pathan had an average of 170 versus spin at a strike rate of 156, which is ludicrous behavior.
Which is, I think that's better than Shreyas Iyer was last year, and Shreyas Iyer averaged 129 against spin last year, right? And with a strike rate of 150. Yeah, and I think, again, you know, you've got to go back to the era that this was in. You know, at that stage, we weren't thinking about versus spin versus pace, right? Like, you know, a lot of the things we talk about in cricket now, you would say someone is stronger against pace or stronger against spin, but no one really understood even what that meant because no one was separating these things. And so to go back and have a look at it, you suddenly understand that this is a player who had the ability to consistently hit spin And even though the one difference I would say between his era and Abhishek's era and Maxwell's era is it's kind of pre-matchup, right? There's a little bit of matchups coming in. But it basically, if your best bowler is an off-spinner, like Harbhajan Singh's still playing, right, as an off-spinner. Whereas now, Harbhajan Singh may not get a game anymore because of matchups, right? They might not bring him in. And yet, you look at it again, and it doesn't really matter to Yusuf Pathan what kind of spinner it is, right? It's just he's going to whack every different kind of spinner. And as you said, he's not going to go out to it.
And if you look at his true values versus spin by year, there's 2 years where his true strike rate is close to 80, which is, again, ridiculous. But almost, I think there's only like 4 seasons where it's not less, where it's less than 20, which is remarkable, right?
And I think that's the other thing that, again, to go back to the Mike Selvey thing. So Mike Selvey basically says this guy's a dirty slogger and got lucky, right? Mm-hmm. And I can understand why he thought that. As I said, from that period of time, it makes a lot of sense. But what we don't understand at that point is what we have here is someone who is consistently hitting spin, right? All the way through multiple years and not going out to it while also scoring at rates that had never existed before. Like it really is a remarkable.
Sunil Narayan just slogging it randomly, isn't it?
Exactly. It's not like if you had Yusuf Pathan in a couple of years averaging 200 against spin with a strike rate of 200, and then the next year he's averaging 15 with a strike rate of 120, you'd be like, okay, fair enough. That's kind of what Mike Selvey is saying makes sense. And that's what we thought we were seeing, right? It's only now when we can go back and we look at it and go, no, this was a man who was absolutely ahead of his time in the ability to mash spin and did it consistently almost every year until the end of his peak.
So if you look at him by period, I think he really declines versus spin after 2016. So his true strike rate versus spin after 2016 is minus 24. And before 2016, it's plus 36. So that's a 60-point swing, right? That's a massive fall off. Like he completely loses his greatest weapon at that point. And also, to be fair, probably shouldn't have been playing the IPL when he became that bad. And I think one of the reasons he just kept getting picked was because of what he'd done before that.
Yeah.
Right?
You get that sort of legend, you know, that extra couple of years, don't you, because of what you've been able to do. But I mean, but again, if you are going that hard all the time, you don't need, like, I'm trying to think, did he have knee injuries? I want to say he had some sort of leg injuries or something at one stage in his career. It could just be that his swing changed, right? And he couldn't, you know, it didn't come down as straight as it had in the past. It might have been that he slowed down. And he couldn't get to the ball at the same rate that he used to. And it could have also been eventually, because he kept hitting sixes everywhere, people started to work out how to bowl to him a little bit better. Like, I think that makes sense. And you're probably, as a team, thinking, well, if he comes good, it's still worth it. He's also, he was one of the first really paid players, wasn't he?
Yeah, so he got paid $2.1 million in the 2011 auction. Yeah. And when KKR bought him, right? Which is, I think a lot of people were shocked by that. Now I'm looking at him like, yeah, you know what? Fair enough to KKR. They got his price right. That's how much you should be paying a guy like him.
Yeah. What's fascinating, as I'm sure we'll mention in a moment, is they may not have used him in the correct way. Explain to me sort of what role Shane Warne plays in all this, because it is a fascinating one.
So I believe that Shane Warne, he talks about this in a YouTube clip, which I think we will show in the video we have, depending on when this goes out. And he talks about how with Yusuf Pathan, I think he's one of the best hitters he's ever seen, and he hits the ball as cleanly as he's ever seen. But with Yusuf, I think even like it goes against his personality, which is basically like he's fully like a very muscular dude, and that's very gigantic, isn't he?
Yeah.
That he's someone that needs a shoulder around him. He's not someone you just give a kick up the backside and just tell him go and perform. Yeah. And I think Warne understood that very well, and he almost backed him really well, right? Something which Yusuf Pathan himself mentions, that how Shane Warne studied what Yusuf was doing. And he understood him and he bagged him. It's hilarious when you look at early Rajasthan, how many spin bashes they had. Because I think Shane Warne, clearly, there was an element of common sense with Warne was doing. I'm like, wait, I'm a spinner. I don't like it when people hit me for sixes all the time. What if we just have a middle order where we have Shane Watson and Yusuf Pathan doing that every day? Maybe we can win this.
And I think if you go back as well, I think there is certainly an element, right, of when the game started, I think there was definitely a... You know, there was that ODI sentiment had come in, right, of knocking the ball around in the middle overs. And Shane Warne has probably bowled to guys who have occasionally tried to attack him, maybe Klusner. The one I think of is, I've got his name now, but the left-hander from Zimbabwe in the 99 World Cup, right? You know, Jonty Rhodes was someone who occasionally would go after him in the middle
of being tests, I guess.
Yeah. And I wonder if there was an element of him being like, well, spin's going to be one of the most important things in the Indian Premier League, right? Like, you know, and if we can find people who don't let spinners settle, then we're in a really, you know, in a good position. And it's one of the things that Warne was really good at, as you know, his ability to just kind of work his way through things really, really quickly and cut to the thing that mattered. Now, we know he also made lots of mistakes and everything else, but he was very good at sort of, you know, he had that sort of MS Dhoni, Owen Morgan, you know, disruptor kind of mind of like, no, this makes sense. This makes sense. So we're gonna do this, right? And I think that perhaps hitting spin was one of those things of like, if other teams are gonna bowl two and three spinners a game, and some of those spinners are gonna be David Hussey, right? it makes sense for us to just bring in people who are gonna whack them for six.
Yeah, and if we look at Yusuf versus specific bowling types, it's against all but till 2016, sorry, against everything but right arm seam, it's true strike rate's over 25, with by some distance his best matchup actually being left arm finger spin. Right. Yep. It's remarkable. And I think his weakness versus right arm pace, relatively speaking, is probably why I think a lot of teams kind of got his utility wrong. Right. Because if you look at what Rajasthan Royals did with Shane Warne, majority of the time, Okay. Yeah. So 45.2% of the time he came in from 7 to 11, which means just after the paces are done in the power play and just when spinners come on, right? Warne got it completely spot on. Right, and I checked the data. The only times he was usually entering the power plays is when they lost early wickets, which is understandable, right? And one of the things that KKR didn't always get right is, initially at least, from 2011 to 2013, only 23% of the time did Yusuf Pathan enter from 7 to 11. That's a big difference, right? That's half as much as what Warne used him as. And Shane Warne never sent Yusuf only at the death, right? The latest he ever went for Rajasthan Royals was at the 15th over mark, and KKR regularly sent nearly one-fifth of his innings from 2011 to 2013 were just coming in at the death and slogging. And as we've said, if he doesn't like right-arm pace as much as he likes spin, he's not going to be very good at that, right?
Yeah, no, and exactly.
Yeah.
No, I think all that is fascinating of, again, you know, one of the things that you mentioned in the piece, which I thought was really interesting, and you know how I can bring anything back to Lance Klusener. But you talked about players like Kyron Pollard. So I was there at St. Lucia when Kyron Pollard made his first 100. And the reason he made his first 100 is we were really sure he had to bat up the order because he was so good against spin, at hitting spin. Like, not always against wrist spin, but if you had no wrist spinners, right, and you had finger spinners, Kyron Pollard was great because he's a big guy with a huge reach and he's quick on his feet. He's going to get to the pitch of the ball and then unless he hits it straight up in the air, you're going to go out, right? You're going to go out of the ground, I should say. So, you know, Kyron Pollard was there. You talked about a bunch of other players as well. Albie Morkel is another one that you mentioned.
Andrew Simons to Australia.
Yeah, Andrew Simons was another good example. I think these guys are so big and strong that we think, well, actually big and strong people should be down the order hitting sixes at the end because they're not proper batters. But what we're saying is now, looking at these guys, is they should have gone up the order because actually the thing that they could hit was the thing that no one else was even. So let's say they score at 8 runs and over in the death, right? In an ODI game, some of these guys, right? And everyone else is scoring at like 7, 7.5. That's great. But if they can also score at 8 runs and over in the middle overs of some of these games and the run rate is 4.5, that's a much bigger difference, right? And then on top of that, their skill sets might actually suggest that they're better off to be up. And if you think about that from a T20 point of view, you can pretty much get 2 runs a ball even with really bad death batting most of the time, unless you're you know, with whoever you send out there. Getting someone who can go up the order and can score at 10 runs and over in the middle overs of a T20 game when the expected runs are 7.5 is massive. That's a massive difference every game. And then on top of that, if you can then work out, well, why are they so much better in the middle than at the end? But because these guys don't look like traditional batters and don't bat like traditional batters, we get our minds a little bit confused and we want to push them further and further down. Whereas actually, in the case of everyone we've just mentioned, it probably makes more sense for them to go up because one of their big skill sets was hitting spin specifically, right? I have traveled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things, the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny sims and get the one that does it all. Go to selly.com good areas and use the code good areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Selly.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I mentioned all of these people. I think it shocked the hell out of me when I found out Albie Mawker was a spin basher, because I have no recollection of it whatsoever. Mm. Right? And I think Pollard, there's a lot of seasons that Pollard's really good versus spin as well. And it's interesting how you find the same patterns with all of them. I think there's, what was it, the 2010 final, right? Pollard comes in at 8 versus Chennai when the game's basically done. Like, yep. What the hell are you guys doing sending him at 8, right? It's like Albie Mawker just kept coming in late and only facing pace at the death, right? Andrew Symons was held back by the Aussies for years. And KKR initially, like, because they had, what was KKR, let me think of KKR's top order. You had Gambhir, Bisla, Jack Callis and Manoj Tiwari all just eating up balls when you just had Yusuf Pathan just waiting to go and unleash himself against spin.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a tactical. Eventually, I'll give credit to KKR and Gautam Gambhir. They spotted their errors, and that utility from 23% in 7-11 goes up to 46% again. Now,
yeah, exactly.
There is a team which never had that level of self-reflection, and that is the Indian cricket team. So if you look at the median entry point for Yusuf by team, it was in the 8th over for Rajasthan Royals. It's the 10th over for KKR because of the initial period as well. And it was the 13th over for India Jar. That is a massive difference. So India, again, used him in 22% of the time from over 7 to 11. Half as much as Shane Warne did, and basically what KKR, the same mistake KKR made initially, right? But KKR course-corrected. India just didn't.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting. And I wonder how much of that also comes back to the star culture of international cricket at the time, because Yusuf Pathan was pretty famous in the IPL, but he's not Yuvraj Singh or Virat Kohli, right? Like, he's not on that kind of level. He's not MS Dhoni. And I do think there's a bit of a pecking order of that. And then again, it's, we have Yuvraj Singh, who is a fantastic cricketer. Do we really want him not to face more balls so that we can bring Yusuf Pathan up the order, right? Like, and I do think that plays a part. And we've seen things like that quite a lot in cricket. This is, you know, I don't want to go on Lance Klusener again, but I will. Like, I do think there is an element of, if you don't bat like a traditional batter, teams will push you further and further down the order, assuming that your best usage is facing 20 balls and hitting sixes at the end of the game. And so India end up with all these players who can play spin. But how did they play spin is the question that we're now asking. And like, looking at the data that you led in this piece, it's like, it's quite clear that these guys were knocking spin around, right? They were not trying to win games by smashing spin out of the park, right? And Yusuf Pathan, and if you put him in the middle of all these other guys, would have completely transformed the way that India would have played.
So he goes in the 7-11 phase four times. The scores were, let me get this right, 48 for 4, 61 for 5, 37 for 5, and was 105 for 5, right? I think that 105 for 5 is also when they were chasing like 216 or something. This isn't say, oh, let's spin us around, let us send Yusuf. It's, oh, we've lost all our wickets, so Yusuf is designated to bat at 7, so he has to go in and bat, right? This is some of the worst utilization of a player I've seen. There's some games where he's batting at 8. Why the hell is Yusuf Pathan batting at 8 in your team, and all the guys who can't play spin are going above him? It's somehow, miraculously, even after all of this, you think Yusuf averages 27 at a strike rate of 176 versus spin. The next best Indian batter until 2016 was Yuvraj Singh with a strike rate of 128. MS Dhoni was 91. Do you remember, Jared, when I was talking about the last piece of how this piece triggered the Dhoni piece? This specific graph, where I was like, the amount of physical pain this graph caused me cannot be explained in words. I was like,
what am I looking at here? Yeah, and I think that, again, like, you know, when you look at that, that's what the sort of thing that would be solved in a couple of games now, right? Like, you know, we've seen that before where sometimes teams get things wrong. Look, we're in the middle at the moment of the KKR having one of the stupidest batting lineups for who their bowling lineup is I've ever seen. And I'm sure we will do a piece on it, because every time I look at my notes, I've got notes on it. It might end up being the exit interview on KKR about...
Do you know who KKR could use now, Jared? Yusuf Pathan.
Yeah, they could definitely use Yusuf Pathan. It said they're all MS Dhoni. But essentially, it's much easier and quicker to be able to do this because we can look at it. But again, in that period of cricket, right, like, we're talking about Dhoni, who is seen as an absolute genius of cricket, and yet it takes 2 seconds of a modern day analysis to go back and go, that might be one of the biggest mistakes a cricket team has ever made, right? Like, and it's it's, you know, you know, I talk about this a lot with Andrew Simons as well. Of Australia wanted Andrew Simons to average 40 at a run of ball in ODI cricket. And I'm like, yeah, but he could probably average 100, and he could probably average 30 at a strike rate of 140 if you just let him play like Andrew Simons. Like, they spent the whole time trying to pull him back. I think Andrew Simons' early T20 career in the Blast, he has a strike rate of 180 or something, right? It would be like Abhishek Sharma now, the sort of numbers that he had back in that period. And so there was this orthodoxy of thinking.
Actually, I disagree. Those were some of his anchoring years. I believe his high intent years was 226 or something like that.
Yeah, he didn't. You're right. It was ridiculous. And, you know, I would almost argue as well, I'm not even sure he played. It was always in his peak years that he did that either.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was just an absolute freak. And there's this orthodoxy, right, of like, you have to play this way. And if anything that the IPL and franchise cricket has allowed for in the last little while is that slow breaking of orthodoxy, right? We're seeing it in test cricket as well, right? Of like, no, there is more than one way to do this. There is not just this way and everything else has to follow it. And so you look at a player like Yusuf Pathan and you're like, well, India might have had one of the most important T20 players in the world, and the only time they ever used him correctly was when their team was absolutely shitting themselves.
Yeah, and if knowing what we know, Jared, if your best weapon is against spin, you should be playing as a middle order batter in Asia. He plays three innings in Asia, two at number seven, one at number eight, right? I think one of my favorite things I've ever seen is when he comes in, like I think it was Malinga Bandra, right? Spinning the web, right? No one can hit him. Rohit can't hit him. Dhoni can't hit him. Somehow Jadeja goes above Yusuf in this. Yusuf just goes, okay, I'm just going to hit him for six and four in four balls. Easy as you like. What is everyone struggling about? And then they somehow win. It's like they somehow tactically did everything they can to make sure he doesn't face spin. And Yusuf, the poor bastard, like he did everything in his power to hit all the spinners he can, even amongst all of that, right?
Yeah.
It's remarkable. And then the last time I think Yusuf is in a squad is in 2012, but that was a rained out game, I think. But the last game T20 internationally played was in 2011. Now, the problem is, as we talked about in the piece, there is three Asian World Cups coming in after that. You drop the guy for failing against pace as a finisher outside of Asia mainly, and to not play spin in Asia, in your World Cup squad, which might be the greatest blunder. So to give people a parallel about how stupid this is, let's say, imagine if people talk about how Rajat Pattidar should get into the Indian team. Imagine if India picked Pattidar, play him at number eight and tell him to go in with 10 balls remaining and hit it, and then dropping him because he failed to do that. How annoyed would you guys be? That's the same level of annoyed you should be with how badly India use Yusuf, right?
It also, the other thing I would say is, if you go back and look at just his raw numbers, right? So he was batting at 6 and 7, as we said before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He averaged 18 with a strike rate of 146 in an era where people did not do that. Right. So you could even make the claim that they were misunderstanding what he was good at, even when he was in the T20 side.
And even if you just looked at raw numbers versus spin, you could have seen he's averaging 27 at a strike rate of 176.
Right? Yeah. So I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, that's really interesting. To begin with. And then I think they actually, it's like they make two mistakes there. They bat him in the wrong position. He actually does okay in that position, but they don't understand what okay is, right? And because of that, they get rid of him again. And as you said, you know, it's kind of like having a fast bowler go to India for three test matches and him taking like, averaging 50 with the ball, and then and he's a swing bowler, and the next test match is in England, and you going, you weren't very good in India, mate. So we can't see how this is going to work. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then let's go to those World Cups.
Do you know, there's a good parallel to that. It's a bit like Australia giving up on Pat Cummins for not averaging 20 in India when he comes back after his ban, right?
Pat Cummins is banned.
Not banned, sorry. It was injury.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And so the 2012, I covered 2012 and 2016, pulled out of 2014 at last minute, but I would have been at all three. But 2012 ends up being the two teams that make the final, Ajanta Mendis, and I can't remember if it was Harath or Murali in 20, it would have been whoever the other spinner
can't
was.
Can't have been, it's not Murali. Murali retires in 2011 from international cricket.
So I can't remember who their second spinner is. And then Sunil Narine is the West Indies spinner as well, right?
And
so,
Badri too, right? I want to say.
Yeah, I think Badri was in that one as well. So suddenly
Yeah, Badri and Narayan, and they have Mendis and Akhila Dhananjaya was the one.
Oh, Akhila Dhananjaya. I didn't remember him from that one. So those are the spin attacks that make it to the final, right? And in that tournament, what happens to India is they fall behind the count a little bit and they need a really big win against South Africa, isn't it?
Yes.
And what ends up happening against South Africa's much vaunted
Rohit Sharma. Goes in at 4 and he makes 25 of 27. And against the threatening spin attack of Faf du Plessis and JP Duminy, I believe who bowled well in that game.
Let's have a look. So they made, where are we? Is this the, they made 152, is that the one?
They win by one run.
Yeah, they end up winning by one run. They had to win by 35 runs. You're missing Johan Botha. So to be fair.
Johan Botha.
Actually, it's Robin Peterson, Johan Botha, Faf du Plessis, and JP Duminy. So they went all in with spin, and only Johan Botha goes for runs. Everyone else goes at about a run a ball in that game. It'd be fascinating, actually, to get Robin Peterson on to talk about that at one stage as well. So in 2012, we're talking about other teams. Like, to win that tournament, you're going to have to face Sunil Narine, Samuel Badri, and Ajanta Mendis, right? And then on the other side of this, you have them not being able to take full advantage of Faf du Plessis, who basically never bowls another ball in his life after this period, would be my guess. JP Duminy, who's very much a sixth bowler. Robin Peterson, who was a fringe player. Johan Botha is the only one there, I would say, he's a frontliner, and that's the guy they end up hitting, right? So that's 2012. 2014. Everyone talks about the great death bowling of the Sri Lankan team and how they absolutely did that. But what happens in the 2014 T20 final?
They bowl 8 overs and go for 45 runs and take one wicket, the Sri Lankan spinners. So if you look at it, Indian batters actually get stuck versus spin even before the death bowling happens, right? And no one is putting pressure because Yuvraj Singh goes out there and he gets stuck. And also something I can't inexplicably explain is Suresh Raina was batting at 6 in both these tournaments. Why? Yep.
So the other guy that they have.
Yeah.
So in that one, they had Senanayake and they have Rangana Harath. And I've actually, a lot of people went on and on about the quick bowling, but I've actually seen over time that Harath spell has got more and more credit. But both the spinners basically going at 5.5 runs and over in that game, right? And it's not like they took loads of wickets. They took 4 wickets in that game and one of them was a run out.
So I need to read out India's strike rates versus spin by each tournament. It was 110.71 in 2012, a gigantic 103.15 in 2014, and an even more gigantic 101.35 in 2016. They were barely going over the ball in 2 tournaments. Jared, I knew India were bad versus spin in this period, at least slow. Did you realize how useless they were in these tournaments?
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today. No, I know, looking back, so 2012... I think the two teams I was always fascinated with were Sri Lanka and the West Indies. I kind of felt that Sri Lanka had to get their title. They ended up getting it in 2014, so I wasn't far off. And the West Indies was the other one that I was quite fascinated in because they were playing in a different way than everyone else. 2014 was probably the time that I started to realize that India wasn't going in the direction they wanted. And by 2016, it was really, really clear that India wasn't putting any pressure back on teams. So much so that I remember me and Tim Wigmore, and Tim Wigmore used this game in his book, is it Cricket 2.0, I think, right? Which is, I won't name all the Indian journalists, but the Wankhede press box is massive. It's like a 5-minute walk from one end to the other, right? And Wigmore came all the way down at halfway to be like, and he talked to almost everyone, and he said, everyone thinks that India's got enough. And I went, they're not even close to having enough, right? And so one of the reasons we thought that, and we talked about it at the time, was the Ajinkya Rahane innings, right? And I'm pretty sure that Wigmore and Freddie Wild's book actually focuses on that innings specifically as what they have gone on to talk about as a match-losing innings, right? Which is now a phrase we use in T20 cricket, which we didn't really use all that much before. But, you know, I can't remember which one of us came up with it, but I know it was a bunch of us talking about it. So by 2016, we did start to think about this a lot more, Varun, and we were starting to go, they're just not trying to maximize their abilities to hit boundaries here, right? And then in that game, I think is Andre Russell goes nuts. He comes out and hits 43 off 20, and it was just game over, right? It was just phenomenal hitting, and Lendl Simmons was brilliant at the other end after them losing a bunch of wickets as well. So, yeah, I think by that stage, we had a bit more of an idea that there was something going on. But so in that game, where are we here? Samuel Badri bowls his four overs, one for 26. And Suleiman Ben bowls his four overs, none for 36. So he went for a little bit more tap. But again, the average runs in that is 9.6 in the game. Suleiman Ben slightly under them. But Samuel Badri ends up with the best figures in the game outside of a great spell by Ashish Neera of anyone, right? And and you've got all these people who can play spin just not scoring off him.
Yeah, I believe so. If you look at it from 2012 to 2016 for the Indian batters, three batters had a strike rate less than 100 versus spin. That is a big, big issue, right, Jared? I think the alarm bell should be going up. And finally, speaking of KKR, the highest strike rate for an Indian batter versus spin was Ajinkya Rahane with 127. How bad does your team have to be versus spin for Rahane to be your best player against spin?
Yeah. And I think a lot cricket. Of these things, I mean, we talked about the orthodoxy and proper batting and everything before. I think a lot of these things also come down to India doesn't go out to spin, right?
Yes.
And so in those days, we were probably more coded to think, in those days, we're probably more coded to think, well, if they're not going out, right, then they're fine against it. And it really is, as I said, it's 2016 is the first time that I really remember. And that's really the birth of people writing about analytics. I think Freddie Wild had been writing about them for a couple more years, and there'd been a couple of guys who'd come and gone. But 2016 is really the period where it's certainly where I start to take that sort of stuff a lot more seriously. And I start to look into, are there other metrics I can find out? So up until that point, it doesn't exist. And so that sort of the idea of a match losing innings and of not striking against spin really comes from that era, right? And everything else that follows it. So I don't want to slag off the Indian team and be like, we all knew. It wasn't really until that tournament that a lot of us started to go, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense.
I can slag them off because I was a child when this happened. So clearly I had an excuse to not. Yeah, now I can yell at them in peace.
But your strike rate pilled because of me, right?
Of course.
And I had to go through that other period. But if you go back through my writing, I've always said this. I've maintained for a long time that, you know, that Sehwag is a much better ODI player than people remembered. Talked about the Andrew Symon thing. It's not a recent thing of me saying that Lance Klusner should have batted up the order, right? Like,
speaking of ODI cricket, Yusuf Pathan, I think, might be Jared's dream ODI batter as well. That never
27
was.
27 with the strike rate 120? Am I close?
Yeah, I think before the World Cup, it was like 33-120-ish or something like that. It was crazy. Oh. And even in the World Cup, by the way, I could do a whole podcast on the 2011 World Cup. They send him almost all his innings are like when he's coming after the 40th over. I'm like, the guy can't hit reverse swing, lads. Stop sending him at that point, right? So going back to Yusuf, Jared, if we did the 11s prop, like let's say quickly do the batting order in each World Cup, with assuming they picked Yusuf, right? In 2012, you'd probably open with Gambhir/Sehwag, I think. Gambhir and Sehwag. Yep. I think Sehwag by then was, I think, unfortunately done. I think he was just falling off. So you're still open with him. Let's say I'd have one of Gambhir or Sehwag opening with Virat as well. You'd have Raina 3, Yuvraj 4, Yusuf 5, Rohit 6 and Dhoni 7. Or if you want more bowling, you could have Dhoni 6 and Irfan Pathan at 7, right? Plenty of options. You have Ashwin in the team. You can pick another seamers. That already makes you a much better spin hitting side because you'd have Raina at 3 and then you'd Yusuf at 5 in the positions instead of Raina at 6 for whatever reason. Yusuf, like on his couch back in India when all of this stuff was happening.
Yeah.
In 2014, let's say, 2014. That's 2012. In 2014, you'd open with Rohit and Rahane. Sure, so let's stick with Rahane if you don't have another option. You can have Virat at 3, Raina at 4, Yusuf 5. So it's a Dhoni at 6, and I don't know who the hell was in that team. So pick someone else at 7. Just pick someone else at 7, and you still pick all the three spinners, right? Mm-hmm. Again, much better spin hitting team. In 2016, you could also do a similar thing, right? You could have, I don't know, Rohit and Shikhar Dhawan opening the batting with Raina at 3, Yusuf at 5, or something like that. Sorry, Virat at 3, Raina 4, Yusuf at 5. Again, lot stronger at hitting spin, right? And this isn't a lot. I think, I'm not saying Yusuf Pathan would have won India every World Cup. I think if India got their batting orders right, in they would have won some one of 2009 or 2010. I think if India got Yusuf in this team, they even won of 2014 or 2016, right? Because even with all this nonsense, they were two no-ball, because if Bumrah and Ashwin didn't bowl no-balls, they might have made the finals in 2016, which would have been the greatest robbery in the history of T20 cricket. Worse than Australia winning 2021, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you're right. They weren't that far away in that particular game. Whether they beat England or not, I thought England were probably a better side than them as well.
Easily
in that tournament. But who knows what happens in the final? And you know, it's a one-off game, and you've got Yusuf, and you're probably not bowling Joe Root to Yusuf. So. Look, I do think that is quite interesting. I think what's more interesting is looking at this now of, like, you and I will get a million messages a day from people saying, oh, the Indian 11's wrong and they should be... And, you know, there are some little mistakes that they make, and obviously, especially in limited overs cricket, nothing major, but realistically...
How dare India pick Tilak Varma ahead of Australia, yeah, say?
Exactly. Such a big blunder. Where it is like, well... Tilak Varma will walk into pretty much any other side on earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about this is where we are in 2026. And yet in 2012, 2014, 2016, and that whole period, none of this existed because it didn't. So that is the moment that everyone should have been up in arms, that the entire team was corrupted and is in the wrong area. So it tells you how much smarter cricket fans are now, even if they're wrong for being like, mm-hmm. if we had Shreyas Iyer, we would have won the World Cup easier, right? Like it's like, actually, the more fascinating thing that you have at the moment is that now the average cricket fan is so much more educated and so much smarter in the way that they think about these things. And all of cricket is, right? I just don't... there are obviously issues happening right now that in 15 years' time, the next podcasters are going to go back and be like, oh, these guys missed this, right? But what's fascinating is cricket fans are, you know, from the birth of Crick Info... all the way through to now, you put Crick Metrics and Crick Sheets in there as well, right? You know, and hopefully, you know, when we get up the Combox version of it as well, the stunning change that we've had with discourse and how we understand all these things, right? On the field, off the field, as fans, is really, really fascinating. And so I'm sure there are huge errors being made now that we're blind to because of the orthodoxy of this moment. But what is fascinating is that Yusuf Pathan really is a genetic mutation that happened in cricket and no one noticed, right? He literally was a new form of batter that we just weren't ready to even understand, right? It didn't make any sense to us. And so India went into three World Cups where he would have been one of their most important players and he didn't play in any of them because in our mind, he's just a slogger at the end of the order. And what we've proved in this is this man is so much more than a slogger. He's like Shivam Dubey and Patidar and Heinrich Klassen and Nicholas Piran.
No, he's better than Shivam Dubey.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. he's better than Shivam Dubey, but Shivam Dubey can't exist without Yusuf Pathan, right? Yeah. And if you think
comments talk about it, right? MS Dhoni almost had to mess up Yusuf and Albi Mokal to get Shivam Dubey right.
Yeah, and so you look at Shivam Dubey and you think about Yusuf Pathan. Shivam Dubey, as you said, is not quite on the same level as Yusuf Pathan. But look at the way teams overreact to Shivam Dubey now.
Yeah.
Right? The entire spinners go missing on the field, right, when he's there. And yet in Yusuf Pathan's era, that wasn't even something that teams would just keep bowling spin to him at times, right? They would keep it up to him because it didn't make sense. And so now Shivam Dubey can be worse than Yusuf Pathan and have more of an impact than Yusuf Pathan did. And I think that's how much Yusuf Pathan has sort of changed the game. I think that going forward, that's what we will see more of, right? Of guys who can just absolutely warp what the opposition can do by their impact. And now, hopefully, they'll be used in the right place. I say this a day after Ajinkya Rahane batted first drop when it was quite clear that a whole bunch of spin was going to get bowled by Chennai, by the way.
Of course. So, Jared, I have a statement. You can agree or disagree with. I think you could say that Yusuf Pathan is the best player of spin bowling India produced in T20 cricket. Adjusting for errors. I think eventually, let's say, Abhishek Sharma will take over. But yeah, until then, I think
it's... Abhishek's projected growth is probably higher, isn't it? But yeah, where they currently stand at the moment, I would think it would be hard to argue that Yusuf Pathan hasn't been India's best ever player of spin because of the average combined with the strike
rate,
right?
That's the main thing, isn't it? Yeah. How many seasons is he averaging over 50 and strike at a very good strike rate versus spin, which is unheard of even now, isn't it?
Yeah, so I just think it's that combination. I think you still get the Shreyas Iyer type players who are very good against spin, but
Chip and Gill?
Yeah, but don't go out to it. And then you get that sort of Patidar Dubé guys who go out to it a bit more, but absolutely hammer it when they get a chance. And he is at the apex of both of those things. And how ridiculous is it that like guys like KL Rahul and, you know, Virat Kohli and all these other players are talked up and Yusuf Pathan is almost forgotten at times?
Yeah, it's not even like people talk about him. At least with KL, there's an element of him being infamous, right, more than famous.
Mm.
With Yusuf, I think I just don't want people to forget how good Yusuf Pathan was and how important he is. Because I was thinking about this, right? Let's forget ODI cricket. Although you and I would probably play almost him in every ODI, right? Now, number five was almost that. I guess the aggressive version of Akshar Patel in the way, it's like instead of making 35 or 45, Yusuf, why don't you go in at five and make 45 or 30 every game in ODI, right? But if the Indian T20, if Yusuf was available now, he'd play for every T20 I for India, I think.
Yeah.
Right? You take him over to Shubham Dubey, right? He gives you bowling too, batting him at five.
If he played now,
how many IPL teams is he an automatic pick for?
Yeah, if he played now, he went for 2.1 million back then and people didn't even truly understand him.
Yeah, he's worth
he's worth so much more than that now in this era where we understand it.
Yeah, it's insane. So I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this. I could talk about Yusuf for one more hour easily. Unfortunately, Jared is obviously an MS Dhoni fan and he doesn't like me criticizing Dhoni in this. So hopefully you guys had a lot of fun. If you want us to do a part two of this, which I'll happily do, let us know. And then, yeah, have a good time, guys. See you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rukshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.